From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? It is Friday, May 27th, 2016. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a great show to close out your week. On today's Current Sports, we will be talking about probably the biggest sports story coming out of the week thus far concerning the University of Baylor. Yeah. Baylor firing head football coach Art Briles. We'll go into the specifics of why the university decided to do that and make that move, and they are troubling to say the least. Also, the University of Michigan football team, you know that spring break trip that they went on? Wait until you hear the dollar figure that was spent on that entire trip as a whole, okay? You don't want to miss that. We'll also have a spring check-in with Deshaun Tate of 92.9 The Game CBS Radio. He is a men's college basketball reporter and producer in Atlanta, Georgia. Deshaun is actually headed from Atlanta to right here in East Lansing, his hometown, as we speak. So during that commute, Deshaun will be joining us via phone. You don't want to miss that as we talk some college basketball. And also, he'll even give us his thoughts on the NBA playoffs. And on the back end of the show, we will chat about a certain Detroit Pistons center who has been named to the NBA's third team. And we will close things out with Reflection Friday. Folks, Memorial Day weekend is upon us, and we are opening up our phone lines. And I want to hear from you. I want to know what your Memorial Day weekend plans are, all right? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, let's begin things with an update concerning the Dean Shippey 55th Annual Diamond Classic. Holt topped St. John's 3-2 to advance to the Diamond Classic semifinals yesterday. Tyler Brown had the game-winning single in the ninth inning for Holt as part of a three-hit night. Grand Ledge had to grind to beat Portland St. Patrick 7-3. In the quarterfinal matchup, but the Comets put the game away right as they were threatened. Now, the semifinals and final will take place at Cooley Law School Stadium, home of the Lansing Lugnuts, slated to take place on June 6th and June 8th. Current Sports will certainly be in the house for the semis and the final game for the Dean Shippey 55th Annual Capital Diamond Classic. All right, showing leadership in support of Empower Extraordinary, the campaign for Michigan State University, women's basketball coach Susie Merchant and her husband have made a $125,000 gift through the Spartan Fund, the fundraising arm of the athletics department, in support of women's athletics at Michigan State University. Now, through Empower Extraordinary, MSU Athletics seeks to raise $262 million in support of building championship-level facilities, increasing its endowment, and elevating annual gifts. Shout-out to Susie Merchant and company. That's pretty big stuff. All right. Jonathan Engelman scored the go-ahead run on a wild pitch with two out in the eighth inning, and Michigan defeated Minnesota 3-2 on Thursday, hours after the Gophers pitching coach Todd Oakes sadly passed away following a four-year battle with leukemia. Number 5 seed Michigan plays today against the loser of Friday's game between Iowa and Ohio State. Minnesota announced the 55-year-old Oakes passed away Thursday morning. He was the Gophers pitching coach for 18 years and had recently entered hospice care. Michigan State's Thursday night game against Maryland was rained out, and they actually played this morning. Don't go anywhere. We give you guys an update on how that one panned out, all right? Stay tuned. Michigan's football spring practice trip to IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida which drew considerable criticism from, of course, SEC and ACC commissioners and coaches, and also praise for being, quote, creative. That trip cost the athletic department, I should say, nearly $350,000. That's a lot of moolah, folks. Now, the team departed on February 28th, held the first four practices at IMG, including the final one on March 4th, which was open to the public, and returned March 5th. Now, Michigan spent $348,553 exactly for the trip, with the biggest chunk, $146,912, for renting the IMG training facility. That is a lot of moolah. All right, the Detroit Lions waived tight end Tim Wright with an injury designation yesterday, leaving the team shorthanded at tight end. Now, starting tight end Eric Ebron did not take part in yesterday's organized team activity workout due to an undisclosed injury, and veteran Brandon Pettigrew is not expected back until August after tearing his ACL last year. Now, undrafted rookie Adam Fain also did not practice yesterday, leaving Matthew Mulligan and rookie free agent Cole Wick as the Lions' only healthy tight ends right now. So that situation is, a tight end situation is a bit iffy right now, folks. Detroit's Nike store opened to the public Thursday morning to applause and cheers from Nike employees. Now, the new two-story, 22,000 square feet store has a mix of factory store merchandise and full-price products, as well as local sports teams' apparels. It is one of seven so-called community stores in the United States. Like the others, it has a mission to serve their cities through volunteer work and promoting physical fitness. Now, Michigan State University head basketball coach Tom Izzo attended the opening ceremony along with Michigan State's mascot, Sparty. And last but certainly not least, Detroit Pistons center Andre Drummond has made the All-NBA third team. The league announced that news this week. The Detroit Pistons center joins Toronto Raptors guard Kyle Lowry, Golden State Warriors guard Klay Thompson, Indiana Pacers forward Paul George, and San Antonio Spurs forward LaMarcus Aldridge on the third team, receiving 13 first-team votes, 26 second-team votes, and 30 third-team votes. A panel of sports writers and broadcasters across the U.S. and Canada voted on the All-NBA teams. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 27th, 2016. Our phone lines are open. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Or you can even tweet me at Al Martin, WKER. So much to get to, so little time. Let's start the show.
Report. Can you tell us what was in the report?
Yeah, Kerry, it's pretty troubling. The report says that Baylor was inadequate in its response to Title IX as far as reporting these incidents. Also, that Baylor administrators discouraged complainants from reporting incidents, and in one instance retaliated against an individual. It also indicates that multiple football players were alleged for a sexual assault and that the football staff and administration did not take appropriate measures. And it basically, it summed it up best. It said there was no culture for accountability among the football program concerning off-the-field issues.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. Memorial Day weekend is upon us. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, we are so humbled and honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. And folks, what you just heard is actually a report from ESPN's very own Brett McMurphy. He is an ESPN college football insider who weighed in via SportsCenter, ESPN's Hallmark show, concerning Baylor, now former football coach, Art Briles, and the firing of his position after 8 seasons at the helm of the squad. Oh boy, this is a sticky situation, folks, because you certainly see the validity to why the university decided to let go of Briles. And for me, it's certainly a conversation of status here. Status and complete ignorance, to be honest. There were multiple incidents involving sexual assault with multiple players on the Baylor football team that were completely ignored by Briles and his respective coaching staff. To sort of give you guys a rundown, I want to go to the exact report and Baylor's statement concerning the findings in the report by a Philadelphia law firm, Pepper Hamilton. Baylor's statement said the findings, quote, reflect a fundamental failure, by Baylor to implement Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972 and the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act of 2013. Now, it goes on to lay out these bullet points. According to Baylor, the findings in the report include, first bullet point, the university's student conduct processes were wholly inadequate to consistently provide a prompt and equitable response under Title IX. Baylor failed to consistently support complaints through the provision of interim measures, and in some cases, the university failed to take action to identify and eliminate a potential hostile environment, prevent its recurrence, or address its effects. Second bullet point, actions by university administrators directly discourage some complaints from reporting or participating in student conduct processes, and in one instance, constituted retaliation against a complaint for reporting sexual assault. That's so disturbing. That bullet point alone is so disturbing. Now, I want to go into the specifics of what is being claimed here. Let's go to the fall of 2015. Baylor hired Pepper Hamilton to review its past treatment of sexual assault claims. Now, Outside the Lines of ESPN reported last week that some Baylor officials, including coaches, knew about the incidents of sexual assault, domestic violence, and other acts of violence involving football players, but most players didn't miss playing time as punishment. Two Baylor players accused of sexual assault were recruited by Briles after they were dismissed from the previous schools for off-the-field problems. In August of last year, former Baylor football player Sam Ukunachu was sentenced to 180 days in jail after he was convicted of sexually assaulting a women's soccer player. Now, of course, Briles took a lot of heat for accepting Ukunachu as a transfer student. After then, Boise State coach Chris Peterson dismissed him from the team for off-the-field issues. Ukawachu's former girlfriend actually testified at his trial that he had struck and choked her when he attended Boise State. Let's go to another incident, shall we? In April, former Bears star defensive end Sean Oakman was arrested on a charge of sexual assault. A Baylor graduate student told Waco, Texas police that Oakman, quote, forcibly removed her clothes, forced her onto his bed, and then sexually assaulted her on April 3rd, according to an arrest warrant obtained by ESPN. Now, Oakman, the school's all-time sacks leader, who wasn't selected in last month's NFL draft, told police he had consensual sex with the woman. Oakman was dismissed from Penn State after he allegedly grabbed the wrist of a female store clerk. And, you know, looking at those incidences alone, it just makes you shake your head and say, what in the world? Why would Art Briles have those two on his football team to begin with? I just don't understand how Briles made it 8 seasons with this program with these incidences taking place under his hat. I just don't get it. So, and when I first heard about the breaking news of this story, I kind of felt like it was eventually inevitable for Briles to lose his job, despite the success that this football team has had in recent seasons. Art Briles is a good football coach, no doubt in that, folks. This Baylor football team has certainly gotten better under his tutelage. But when you are talking about countless sexual assault claims against your players, and you don't take the necessary steps to make sure that your players are held accountable or do your due diligence to further research those claims, your morality goes out the window. You getting wins for your football program and the success that you've had as a football team, that has nothing to do with your moral character. And I think we sometimes get clouded by success in athletics. There's an overlying umbrella of opinion when it comes to student athletes at big time universities. You see it countless times. I went to Michigan State University, and there was always this old adage that student athletes who played for the Michigan State football team or basketball team, if you played for one of the two big sports, that you would get away with a lot of stuff. You didn't have to go to class. That's still an old adage that exists here at many universities across the nation. And there's an overlying umbrella of opinion also that student athletes can get away with anything. That's what many students who attend classes who aren't athletes, that's how many of them feel about the big-time student athlete. And it's so troubling to me when you have a big-time university like Baylor, when you have football players there on more than one instance get accused of sexual assault, and you don't have the individuals who you expect to go about it the right way. You don't have those that core of people. You don't have them following up on anything. So this was the right move. Simple as that. Art Briles had to go. The big question now, for me, number one, is what is going to happen with those young women who have accused, you know, these football players of sexual misconduct. Are those claims going to be followed up on now? Or is this just going to go, or is Baylor just going to kind of put this under the rug and say, all right, we fired our football coach. That should be enough. We're going to put in an interim, see how that goes. But number one for me, those claims that have gone silent over the years, what's going to happen with that? Because there is a lot of emotional distress that I can only imagine goes through the mind of any woman who has been sexually assaulted. So for me, that has to be the number one concern here. Finding out what exactly happened to those who are accusing Baylor football players of this misconduct. Number two is, how bad will this hurt the football program? How bad will this hurt the university as a whole, simply put? And it's so crazy because this week we not only had the Baylor story, but today at around 11 a.m., we had another story breaking concerning just misconduct with another university, Ole Miss. Ole Miss has self-imposed a double-digit reduction of scholarships for football, as well as an already served postseason ban for women's basketball as a part of its response to an NCAA notice of allegations that was released this morning. In its 154-page response to the NCAA, Ole Miss officials said that the school, quote, accepted responsibility for the violations that occurred and self-imposed meaningful penalties. So, among the NCAA's allegations regarding the Ole Miss football program, it's going to read through them real quick here. Former assistant coach David Saunders arranged for fraudulent ACT scores for three prospects in the summer of 2010. Saunders and former Ole Miss assistant Chris Vaughn were also accused of unethical conduct related to the testing fraud, and they were accused of providing temporary lodging, meals, and entertainment for recruits in June and July in 2010. In its response, Ole Miss officials agreed that the testing fraud did occur. Vaughn violated the NCAA cooperative principle by communicating with witnesses of an NCAA enforcement investigation even after being admonished on several occasions to refrain from having such conversations. Now, the NCAA determined this conduct was a level one violation. Also, I mean, there's many violations here, folks. Also, between August 2014 and August 2015, an unnamed booster provided football players with impermissible extra benefits in the form of complimentary vehicle use, which the NCAA determined was a level one allegation. Additionally, in June of 2015, the booster provided a player with an impermissible interest-free car loan. The NCAA said the monetary value of the extra benefit was approximately $7,495. Also, the NCAA alleged Ole Miss officials failed to monitor the activities of the booster, a level two violation. On or around August 22nd, 2014, an Ole Miss booster provided a football player with $800 cash, a level one violation. Between June 7, 2013 and May 27, 2014, an Ole Miss booster provided extra benefits to a football player in the form of free lodging in Oxford, Mississippi, a level one violation. The NCAA value said the value of that benefit was approximately $2,253. What I don't understand here, folks, is that if you know the rules, and again, I'm not saying here that everything the NCAA does and regulates is kosher, okay? Because we all know that the NCAA has some rules that I just scratch my head and say, really? I just don't understand sometimes. I don't like the NCAA and how they run their business. I must be honest with you. But what I don't understand is those who are coaches and personnel for a program in college, under the NCAA, if you know what the rules are, why toe that line? I don't get that. Do not get that. You know, I was listening to Tom Izzo not too long ago. This brings up a memory where I was just driving around, and he was on a local radio show, another show. I'm not sure which one it was, but Tom mentioned how, you know, he's always in communication with the NCAA in regards to possible violations. He is always making calls to make sure, because the NCAA has a lot of rules, and it's real easy to break some of them. I understand, because sometimes you just don't know that you're breaking them. But Tom knows that, so he is in constant communication with those individuals to make sure that he does not cross any lines. He's very detailed in that respect. So when you look at these claims with boosters giving money to football players and other members of the program. I just don't understand, as a head coach, how you cannot know that that's going on. So, you know, now this is a big fiasco. So in the span of 1 week, we have two breaking stories concerning universities in hot water. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, folks. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, Baylor has fired head football coach Art Briles after 8 seasons and pretty solid success. And Ole Miss self-imposes double-digit reduction in football scholarships due to breaking many rules in recent years. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, to the show. Isaac, what's your reaction to this whole big mess?
I don't know whether it's just the awareness of these sorts of issues, which is drawing more spotlight and bringing them more into the forefront, or whether it's becoming more common, which would be horribly more worrisome for the game of football and for the NCAA. But, I mean, good for Baylor, I guess, for making the right call, but why did it have to go so long? It doesn't sound like anybody was really in the dark about this issue. It seems like it was an institutional problem, and everybody sort of knew what was happening, and until a few brave people decided to speak up, nothing was being done. It reminds me of the Penn State Jerry Sandusky trial. So, no, I think it's long overdue. It is troubling, of course, but at the same time, at least we're seeing steps in the right direction. But I just don't know how, as a head coach of a football program, you've got to understand, your main export is not the play on the field. That's secondary to the brand image and to the type of person who you breed. And that sounds corny. That sounds like, oh, it's sportsmanship first. Don't even worry about how you do. If you had fun, you won. And that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying it is your job to represent the university. And you do that by winning when possible. But you do never cross and break the lines of morality, of clear-cut examples of how to act in a society just to win a football game. And that's what it seems like Art Briles did and the entire Baylor University, because they hired good coaches and they recruited good players. Mm-hmm. But they had blatant disregard for the other aspects, the other sides of their profession. And that's troubling. And you know what? I don't think we'll see a stop to these sort of allegations necessarily, because all the time people are desperate to win games and they don't understand that that has to come secondary to certain other aspects. And that's representing your program and your school with an upstanding sort of justice and honorable fashion and just a way of carrying yourself.
And, you know, I got to be honest, Isaac. I mean, over the years, we've seen many athletes that have gotten in trouble concerning domestic violence against another woman or sexual assault. And in many ways, I feel like there are athletes out there who believe that they are above the law, that they are riding so high on that pedestal, so high on that notion of fame and notoriety, that they believe that they can get away with anything. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a speeding ticket, whether it's anything.
Yeah, you saw J.T. Barrett pull that card when he was pulled over.
Exactly. Do you know who I am? The do you know who I am card. You know what I mean? And I feel like that there are many athletes out there when it comes to relations with the opposite sex, they believe that they are entitled to everything, especially when it comes to women. And it just blows my mind how I see that mindset over and over and over. Just because you are the star athlete on the football team, that you're entitled to any woman out there. I just don't understand. I've seen that mentality firsthand, dude.
Me too.
And It just blows my mind. You know, I was watching that ESPN Outside the Lines report, and what shocked me was not that aspect of it, not what she went through, because, you know, we've seen that story before. It's so sad. It's so sad. My heart went out to her, and her name is Jasmine Hernandez. She's a former Baylor student, a sexual assault survivor, and she went on ESPN's Outside the Lines and said that she was, quote, very surprised, end quote, by Baylor's actions, given, quote, they've shown over the years to react as minimally as possible, end quote. Now, that goes to my second point here. There is a lot of pressure to win at the college realm. And a direct tie for me, a direct example I can bring up is my Dallas Cowboys. When the Cowboys decided to sign Greg Hardy, given that he went through an incident where he was, you know, he was found to have thrown his then girlfriend, I believe, on a couch or a futon filled with weapons,
assault weapons. Yep.
I sat there and said, okay, what GM or coach in his right mind would want a player of that character on their team? But the fact of the matter is, Greg Hardy is a pretty good football player, and he can win you football games. So in the lens of Jerry Jones, he's sitting there looking at an incident like, okay, That's all done. He's not in jail. We're trying to win games here. Let's sign him. It's winning sometimes trumps, if not all the time in many instances, trumps moral obligation and character. And that's the problem that I have. Art Briles looked at a few of these players and said, you know what? I see what you're going through there, but at the same time, we need you on the football field because I need you to win games. And I must say, you know, Art Briles is a pretty good football coach. If you look at what he did at Baylor, Isaac, I mean, Art Briles led Baylor to 4 10-win seasons in his 8 years as coach and ranks as the third winningest coach in school history after just 8 seasons. That's mind-boggling. But at the same time, I think this situation sends a message. The firing of Art Briles sends a message out there that in the world that we live in today, especially, I have to look at the statistics with this, but I feel like those who are victims of sexual assault, I feel like many women are not afraid to come out now, because the numbers could be the same. I don't know. I feel like the numbers are skewed over the years because many women, and what you come to find, Isaac, is many women who have gone through something like that are just scared to come out and say that they've been through something like that. Nowadays, you see so many coming out now that a lot of women are feeling confident to share their story to help the next individual. So I don't know if the incidences have slowed down over the years, but with the amount of claims that we see year after year after year, you have to now, as a head coach, GM, president of the university, or any athletic realm for that matter, you have to take those claims more serious than ever. It's crazy, dude.
Oh, and I agree because, like I said, it's a business, it's a brand, it's a product that you're selling. And wins are great, but at the same time, any professional organization, you brought up your Cowboys, Jerry Jones wants to win football games. More importantly, he wants to make money. And the thing is, if you hire a player, if you sign a player who's going to win you football games, but is going to tarnish your brand image and lose you fans, as the Greg Hardy signing should have. I mean, anybody who was like, huh, I'm considering becoming a Cowboys fan, they should have been turned off by that whole thing. I mean, that's simply the fact. That's not to say that my Saints have had the cleanest record either. That's not taking shots at any team. But I'm saying there are certain instances where, yes, those sort of trials trump football, trump whatever's being played on the field. And that's why I think the problem is, and laying into that entitlement claim, because I think you're spot on with that. I think it's the fault of the fans, the universities, the media, everybody, including us. And that's because MSU is getting a $55 million stadium upgrade for the basketball team, new training facilities, new locker, I'm not exactly sure what, new media entrance, whatever. And that all plays into the sense of entitlement. Yes, we're not paid, but look what we have. Yes, look at all of the benefits we get, look at all the fan worship we get. And when you have all of that, it's impossible not to let it get to your head. And that just leads all over to gender relationships with the opposite sex and how you treat other people. And that's the problem, in my opinion. It all comes back to how much glorification these athletic programs get at the expense of more important issues, honestly.
And, you know, I could go on, we could do a 3-hour show on this topic alone, Isaac. There's another layer to it as well. A lot of these young men growing up today, especially, and I see this firsthand because I'm a mentor in Detroit, and I see this firsthand all the time. Young black males are growing up today without an example, without a male example out there of how to treat and respect a woman. Because the fact of the matter is, there is a lot of broken homes. A lot of broken homes in the African-American community. And there are dads out there, don't get me wrong. There are many dads out there that show that example to their son. But there are far too many that don't exist. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with Deshaun Tate of 92.9 The Game, CBS Radio down in Atlanta, Georgia. We will continue to also take your calls throughout this hour, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. That and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is May 27th, 2016. Yeah, today starts Memorial Day weekend. Can you believe that? Did you know that it is the fourth busiest travel day of the year, folks? Can you believe that? That's right. Many people are hitting the road as we speak right now to get home to family and friends to enjoy the 3-day weekend. I wish you all safe travels out there. Isaac, any cool plans for Memorial Day?
Yeah, so my dad's actually in Chicago for the weekend on a business trip. So I plan on taking the trip over Saturday night and maybe spending a day or two in Chicago with the pops.
That should be a fun time, dude.
I'm looking forward to it. Chicago is such a great city.
Oh, too, I love the Chi. I mean, I have two of my best friends who live out there, and they absolutely love it. But yeah, I'll be heading to Detroit to see my fam and kind of, you know, chill out and barbecue and play a ton of golf. I plan on playing a ton of golf. I'm really looking forward to that this weekend, especially if the rain holds up. I know it's supposed to rain here in mid-Michigan later on this evening. But should be a pretty clear weekend in the D, so I'm looking forward to that. So let's get to our guest for today's show, who is actually en route to his home here in Mitten, Michigan. His name is Deshaun Tate of 92.9 The Game, CBS Radio. He is a men's college basketball reporter and producer in Atlanta. Deshaun Tate, welcome to the show. How you doing, Deshaun?
Man, Al, I tell you what, I'm tired. I'm flying on this thing they call Spirit Airlines at the time, and man, I'm crunched up, I'm bunched up, and I think I was pretty much good though, man, with the exception of the bunched up seating arrangement they had going on this thing they call Spirit Airlines. As long as I didn't have any kids crying, babies crying on the plane, nobody kicking the seats, or any of those crazy Wolverine fans trying to jump in the way of me and my plans for the Memorial weekend, I was all good to go, so I'm ready, man. I love Michigan.
Isaac, you know, I like how Deshaun refers it to as the thing they call Spirit Airlines.
I know.
Well, I like that.
And I always fly Spirit Airlines, too, and I actually enjoy it for one reason. Obviously, it's cheap. Obviously, it's a little bit janky, but they don't have – they're so cheap. They don't have seats that recline because I find that to be the most aggravating thing when you're flying, when somebody's just – leans back, especially if they're carrying a little bit extra poundage. I can't stand that.
Yeah, it is a bit annoying, but that's pretty cool. Deshaun, you'll be here for the weekend, Memorial Day weekend. I know you've been working hard, brother, so this is a much-needed break, and we're glad to have you back on as for a quote-unquote spring check-in, if we will, right? Now, I want to start by talking about Denzel Valentine and Deontay Davis. I want to get your thoughts on your overall, you know,
perception of how NBA ready these two players are, and where exactly do you think they will go in this year's NBA draft?
Well, here's my thing first, Al. I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for everyone, but let me say this. I have a feeling that the majority of the consensus, whether they want to admit it or not, especially a lot of the people in East Lansing, have a much better feeling about Denzel Valentine in regards to being more ready. Of course, he's done his 4 years as opposed to the 1 year that Davis has done. But I really believe that Denzel Valentine is going to be a huge steal for somebody, and that's actually kind of surprising to say, actually, considering all things, because I've been hearing so many comparisons to Draymond Green, and that's one reason why I do believe that Denzel Valentine is going to be probably a higher pick than what most NBA mock drafts are actually projecting him to be, because he can do so many different things well on the floor like a Draymond Green. My personal opinion about Deontay Davis, just to be quite honest, I know the people in East Lansing are going to hate me, so don't chop my head off when I get there, but I don't think he's ready. I don't believe that he's mentally ready on top of not necessarily being physically ready. I'm not mad for him for taking the money, but I don't think that he's ready. We're talking about NBA draft. One thing I talked to you about on your show at one point was the ratings or the rankings versus evaluation. They see so much in the NBA draft now. It's not even about, you know, who can come in and be able to give production and good minutes off the bench or even starting role for that matter anymore. Now it's become more about, you know, being a project and working them up and building them up and try to build a machine. And 3 years later, you don't know what you're getting. You're putting kids in a situation that's really tough. I don't think that Deontay Davis is a lottery pick, in my personal opinion. I know everyone else seems to be really high on him, but he really reminds me, if I had to compare him to somebody in the league, it would probably be somebody like a Hassan Whiteside. The Hassan Whiteside that came out of school at Marshall, more than the Hassan Whiteside that you only see right now in Miami, who's also a free agent with raw offensive skills, but can do two or three things very well. That's block shots and that's rebounding the paint.
Yeah, you know, it's real interesting, Deshaun, because, you know, I looked at last week a few of the mock drafts out there concerning the draft stock of Deontay Davis and Denzel Valentine, and I saw many people, you know, looking at both of those individuals of going, you know, 13 to 16. Now this week, things have changed a bit. I see Deontay Davis is now a lottery pick in the top 10. 9-8 is what I'm hearing. Denzel is still around that 12-13 mark. What does it say that Deontay Davis, you know, a player who, you know, who decided to go one and done, and I don't think you're rubbing many people wrong when you say that, Deshaun, because I do think that the general opinion of Deontay Davis and his draft stock is that the kid needs a little work. He could have used a few more years here at Michigan State to hone his skills down low on both sides of the basketball. I feel like many Spartan fans, that they agree with you on that respect. But what does it say that Deontay Davis is projected pretty much everywhere to go before Denzel Valentine, who was like a 5-time National Player of the Year this past season? Okay, well, the dial tone answered that question, didn't he, Isaac?
We got him calling back right now.
I don't think that's ever happened in current sports radio history. I heard the dial tone, too. I didn't know if that was Deshaun or not. We're going to get Deshaun back on the phone right now. Hey, it's live radio, folks. Live radio. So, but again, I do think it says a lot. I'm reading here. This is from Newsday.com, folks. Deontay Davis, a number 9 projection, slated to go to the Toronto Raptors. It says, quote, Deontay Davis has extremely high potential defensively at 6'11 with a 7'2.5 wingspan and a quick leap. Davis posted a 10.2% block rate last year. The key in that whole spiel is potential. It's all about potential and ceiling in the NBA draft. So I don't know where we cut out. We do have Deshaun Tate again of 92.9 The Game, CBS Radio, men's college basketball reporter and producer in Atlanta. He's back on the phone right now. So I don't know where we cut out on that discussion, Deshaun, but and real briefly here to sum that question up, what does it say about Davis being slated to go before Denzel Valentine, giving the fact that
Denzel Valentine was, you know, a National Player of the Year candidate this past season?
It's just really about project, you know, and that's what the NBA looks for right now. And on top of that, you know, you can get guards from just about anywhere nowadays. You know, it's really hard to find those bigs who are athletic and have high IQs. And he mentioned something earlier a few weeks ago about maybe, you know, saying that he had a three-point repertoire that he's added to his game a little bit. I'm not sure how factual all of that is, but I will say one thing is the scary part is that a lot of NBA GMs consider guys, and this is absolutely crazy if you think about it, 21, 22 years old, done 3 or 4 years in college, and, you know, you see them dropping so far. I mean, we saw the same thing with Adrian Payne when he was coming out as a senior, and you would think that would be a better thing because they're actually able to step in right away and give a little bit more to a team, you would think, due to the experience that they have. That's not necessarily the case anymore in the NBA, and actually I think it's quite unfortunate.
Ben Simmons, is he the clear number one pick coming out of LSU?
I don't think it's clear, but I do think that he is the number one pick. At least he's my number one pick, per se, because he still has that talent. A lot of people talk about, well, Simmons can't shoot. Well, for a guy that averaged, I don't know, just roughly off the top of my head, probably 20 and 11, maybe somewhere close to that, without a jump shot, just goes to show how much more of a man he is and how much growth, if you put a jump shot on top of that, that he really can be. And that's not a knock by any means on Brandon Ingram. I think there's been too much Kevin Durant comparisons to his talent and not as much Kevin Durant comparisons to his body size. Imagine how many times we'll hear the word wingspan on draft night when we're talking about Brandon Ingram. But everybody's talking about take Brandon Ingram over Simmons. Simmons didn't necessarily help himself with raising some eyebrows to some NBA GMs in regards to, you know, some off-the-court issues and not going to class earlier in the year, and then came out and apologized, and then he wasn't eligible for the Wooden Award to be the National Player of the Year. But I will say this. Let's not sit up here and act like, you know, guys that go to Duke and come out and go to the league do all of that. You know, you've got some guys, you got Kyrie Irving, you've got some guys that went to Duke and they can contribute right away. But we won't sit here and act like every guy that comes off of a Coach K coached program automatically go into the NBA and puts in work.
Yes, of course. And you're looking at the Philadelphia 76ers. They have the number one overall pick in this year's NBA draft, followed by the LA Lakers. And yeah, it's definitely between Brandon Ingram and Ben Simmons. And, you know, there's been a few reports from national pundits out there that have said that the Philadelphia 76ers are currently leaning toward picking Ben Simmons. So only time will tell in that discussion, Deshaun. Now, this week, we chatted about this on yesterday's show, Deshaun. Melo Trimble is returning to Maryland. He's decided to take his name out of the hat for this year's NBA draft and return to Maryland for his junior season. Right or wrong move?
I think it could have really gone either way. One thing that I just found out about earlier in the week is that he's had a history of some leg and some back problems, which I wasn't necessarily in the knowing of from the very beginning, but everybody talks about how he needs to come back, and he's so inconsistent. I think he's actually one of the better pure point guards in the draft. He's a little undersized, but the same thing was said about Trey Burke. And let me say that quietly, Trey Burke, because I know the people in East Lansing don't like to hear that name. But he reminds me a lot of him with those big shots that he can take, and they're always, you know, daggers that you're putting in the hearts of the opposition. I mean, I don't see nearly as much on the negative side of Melo Trimble as everyone else seems to. And, I mean, maybe he can pass the ball a little bit more from time to time. Or I don't know. I guess I don't see what everyone else sees. I think he comes out in this class and he's one of the best point guards. To me, I thought he was the best point guard in the country all year long this year. And him being able to come back, he may not have all the pieces. He won't have the same pieces that he had. He won't have Carter. He won't have a lot of those guys. I think they're losing probably like 3 of their 5 starters for sure, if not 4 of their 5. I think it could have gone either way. If you're not hurting for money and you're okay with where you are from an injury standpoint as far as being healthy, I think it's okay to come back and try and give Mark Turgeon something they can look forward to.
But you have to admit, Deshaun, it was very evident that the mellow tremble that we saw to start that men's college basketball year was not the same dude that we saw in the second half of the year. He looked like a different player. And, you know, and Isaac brought up a good point yesterday, and I didn't even think about this. Do you think that Melo, because, you know, he could have been a high draft pick last year. He was projected as a second-round pick. I think that's what scared Melo to say, you know what, I need to improve my stock. Let me come back from my junior year and have a consistent year through and through from the start to the very end. Do you think Melo made a mistake in not coming out after his freshman year?
I don't know if I necessarily call it a mistake. We'll find out a lot about that around this time next year. I probably would have come out for sure probably last year if I was him. Like I said, so much rides on this stuff, especially considering where you are as far as financial situations with the family and things of that nature. And I know that Melo was not the same player that he was in the second portion of it, but neither was Melo. Was the same this past year as they were the year before. So Maryland as a whole has become a little bit exposed, mostly because of the Big Ten. You won't surprise anybody in your second year. Your first year, you might get away with some things here and there, but you won't surprise anybody in your second year. And I think, unfortunately, he's facing some of the effects of, my personal opinion, Mark Turgeon not being a really
Deshaun, I think you're cutting out on us a little bit. The signal's going in and out, but we're going to try to get you out of here with this one. I want to get your thoughts on the Big Ten and ACC challenge, the likely preseason number one, Duke Blue Devils. They will host Michigan State in the marquee matchup of the ACC Big Ten challenge, slated to take place on November 29th. Duke and Coach K has certainly had the number of Mr. Tom Izzo. Duke has actually won 5 in a row against Michigan State, including the 2015 national semifinal. Oh, did he cut out? Okay,
yeah.
Maybe it's the airline that he's at. Okay, but what are your I'll pose that question to you, Isaac. I mean, on the ACC Big Ten challenge. I mean, what are your thoughts on this challenge? Do you like the Big Ten ACC duel? And how in the world has Coach K been able to enact 5 in a row over Izzo? That's craziness.
Yeah, it really is crazy. But I love the idea of an interconference regular season battle because essentially it pits the best two teams or the best two conferences against each other and lets you rank them going into the tournament. So you can say, well, look at it earlier in the season. The Big Ten or the ACC looked better than this other conference. Therefore, it might make more sense to make this team a 1 seed instead of a 2 seed and blah, 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 all of that. But it helps when considering the stature of these programs and these conferences. I love it.
I do too, because I think it's an early litmus test. You get
exactly
to see where this team is, and that's what Tom Izzo does every single year. He loves to have this top-heavy schedule to see what holes he needs to plug in his squad, what chinks in the armor exist, and he does a great job in making those modifications as the year goes on. So I love it as well, but it's so surprising that Coach K, 5 in a row, though, Izzo certainly is going to have a chip on his shoulder come November 29th. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, 5 minutes left in the show, we will put a bow on this Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports by hitting you with Reflection Friday. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. 5 minutes left here in the show. We love to close out each and every week here on WKAR AM 870 by reflecting on the week that was here on Current Sports and bringing to you some of our favorite moments, interviews, conversations, and maybe a few stories that we did not get a chance to bring up. Here we go. Well, I want to start off by saying I want to thank every guest that we've had on throughout this entire week. Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio down in Atlanta today. We also had Maurice Ager, former Michigan State hoop star and NBA player, who is now a musical hip-hop artist out in Los Angeles, California. It was great chatting with him. We had Taylor Rooks of the Big Ten Network, sports reporter and anchor for BTN. She is a fantastic, fantastic reporter. If you haven't checked out her work, you definitely need to do so. And we also even had Kelvin Torbert, also former Michigan State hoop star and Mr. Basketball for the state of Michigan back in 2001. Just our guests were absolutely dynamite this week. I had a great opportunity chatting with each and every one of them, Isaac.
Yeah, I did too. And yeah, just a really pleasant week here on the show. I actually want to go over to the Michigan State baseball team winning their first game 5-1 against Nebraska. 5-run sixth inning. Cambio, 8.2 innings on the mound, just gave up 3 hits. Nebraska, not only were they the number 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament, but they're playing at home, essentially. The game and the tournament itself is in Omaha, Nebraska, so really impressive for the Spartans. And, you know, if they can come out of this well, it sets them up very well for the College World Series. I also want to focus on the spelling bee.
Well, hold on, before you go into that, you know what they did this morning? They beat Maryland.
Yep.
So they now move on after beating Nebraska. I mean, now they need to win the entire enchilada. They got to get the whole bowl if they want to qualify for NCAAs. So,
exactly.
Hey, Jake Boss and this team, they haven't had a start like this in like years, like dating back to like the 80s or 70s.
Well,
so,
the start of the season was the best in history.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, right? So, hey, congratulations to Jake Boss and company. I'm curious to see if they can keep this ball rolling.
Yeah, I also, but on to the spelling bee. Shown on ESPN every single year. I'm not sure exactly why, but at the same time, I love the event. And I can't give you names because I just saw this, but one of the kids was so cocky throughout the spelling bee. He was refusing to shake hands. He was shaking his head no when the other person misspelled a word. It was unbelievable. After the competition was decided and he was named a co-winner, apparently he made the Dez Bryant famous X symbol, the touchdown celebration. So, I mean, that makes it a little more sporting, I guess.
Oh, I saw it, and I immediately died laughing. Like, this dude was like the Kobe Bryant of the spelling bee,
all
right?
Pretty much.
Oh, my goodness. Hilarious stuff, right? So, also, what are your Memorial Day? Well, I already talked about your Memorial Day plans. So, you're going down to the Shy. I'll be in the D. Again, if because I don't think we got any callers about it, but, hey, I want to know what you're doing for Memorial Day weekend. Shoot us a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKR. And, hey, we have an encore special for Monday's show. So we will have an encore for you for Monday, just giving you guys a heads up. So while you're on the grill making your hot dogs and hamburgers and whatever else you like to eat, hey, tune in to Current Sports on Monday, all right? We'll be back at it live and in full effect on Tuesday. But, hey, on behalf of all of us here at WKAR, have a fantastic and safe weekend. Travel safely, folks. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.